Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. It's your weekly podcast. Where else would you be? What else could you be listening to? You'd be doing boring stuff. I don't know, you might be doing boring stuff as you listen to us, because I've had people tweeting us. I asked the question, what do you do when you listen to Absolute Rally? We've had people dog walking, I nearly said something else then, dog walking, reading, travelling, working, doing all kinds of things. But please do keep them coming in, because I'm always fascinated to know what's going on. Anyway, without further ado, we always start the programme when I say, hello Jack Bengen.
Hello Tony Simpson.
Hello Ryan Champion.
Hello.
We are back in full effect this week. You have your trio. We're all back in one place at the same time. Right. We're going to talk about the Pirelli Rally in the not too distant future. We're firstly, as ever, we're going to go through the headlines. And I want to go through the headline, Jack, of the cover page, please, of MN this week. If you can just explain to our listeners just what's going on. Crisis.
Yeah, we've got a pretty big crisis at the minute, unfortunately. We've got some trouble in Wales. It's the Motorsport Association, who looks after motorsport in the country. They're having trouble agreeing a deal with National Resources Wales, which is a government body that is responsible for forests. So in order for rallying to happen in Wales, a deal has got to be made. It's called a master agreement between Motorsport Association and National Resources Wales. And at the minute, they're struggling to come to a deal. National Resources Wales is trying to recoup the costs that rallying does to the forest, the damages that it does, and the Motorsport Association can't really agree to the uprated fee because it'll send entry fees through the roof. So we've got a bit of a stalemate happening at the minute.
Now, this is something which obviously it is very UK centric, but everybody always thinks, I suppose, of rallying in the UK in Welsh forests and everything else. Now, I've got an open letter here which has been sent by Rob Jones, the chief executive of the MSA, to basically all MSA members, and also I assume it's gone out to the press as well. And I'm gonna read it just so our listeners can get a feel of what's going on, perhaps. An open letter from the MSA chief executive regarding forest stage rallying in Wales. You will be aware that there is no confirmed fees for accessing the Welsh forest stages beyond the 31st of May following the expiration of the previous master agreements on December 2015. In contrast, a new 2016 agreement for England and Scotland were agreed in January based on the 2015 prices plus RPI at 0.7%. Now, I'm not going to read the whole thing out. I think we just need to read that section out, because basically what's happened is here for our listeners, and both in the UK and elsewhere in the world, it's been broken down. So Scotland's got their own agreement. England's got their own agreement. Now, the Welsh forests have also got their own agreements, obviously. Now, right, you've been involved with rally committees and such like over the years, and I don't know whether we've never heard of this stuff before, have we? And that's what kind of troubles me.
This is ongoing negotiations that are done every year by the MSA. And like you said, I guess normally it's done in the background. The only thing that competitors, marshals, media, etc. see is normally when there's an announcement about a new agreement. Now, the figures in isolation always look pretty difficult to swallow, you know, when you're paying £700 a mile or whatever it is to use some forestry. You know, it always looks like quite a high cost. Now, one of the issues we have in the UK generally is the majority of our rallies are held on Forestry Commission land, and therefore, to a degree, they actually control how much it costs us to go rallying, and also some private landowners have since come in line with what the Forestry Commission charge. Now, like you said, we don't normally hear quite so much about it, because it all just normally goes on behind the scenes. It's announced, and we go, yeah, it's going to cost us more to go rallying, and everything carries on again. Suddenly this time, obviously, the Welsh part of the Forestry Commission, if you like, suddenly think it costs twice as much to repair their roads as the UK and Scotland, as England and Scotland. There's something not quite right there, isn't it? Either England and Scotland can't quite work out their calculator, or Wales are adding some zeros onto theirs. I'm not sure where the truth lies at the minute.
I think, and certainly I'm going to bring Jack in a second on this. You know, obviously the jungle drums were bouncing, as you can imagine, on a rally over the weekend. Everyone wanted to talk about this. Everyone wanted to discuss it, because it's happening, and it's happening now. Now, I'm hearing different things, and obviously I had one kind of statement that's gone out, and I can't quote it verbatim, so it would be unfair of me, but something that I did hear is that effectively they're paying for the same mileage twice, because they're paying before the rally and they're paying after the rally. So if they're paying before the rally, who's going into the forest destroying the roads so they've got to repair them for the rally? Surely that's where there's an element of cost has to be proportioned back to those bodies that are indeed going into the forest, causing the roads to be damaged in the first place so they can actually run a rally. Surely, Jack?
Yeah, it's difficult because obviously National Resources Wales quotes the MSAFE, which is what damage rally does to the forest. But you know, you can't go in there and follow every car and work out exactly how much damage has been done to the roads, because that's not really, you know, it's not physically, you can't really quantify it, if that makes sense. It's difficult to work out exactly how much damage is done, but that's the fee they're quoting, and that, you know, whether anyone agrees with that or not is irrelevant, really. It's up to the MSA and National Resources Wales to come to agree to that figure and sign the deal again.
Yeah, again, you know, if people want to search out this, if there is a genuine interest, I'm sure if you go on the MSA website, you'll find Rob Jones's open letter. And you know, we all need to be aware of this stuff. I've spoke to a few people. It would be unfair of me to quote, you know, people, you know, by name and things like that. But the people I have spoke to certainly have very, very big concerns at the moment with regards to the fact that whether they actually need rallying. And that may sound odd, and I know Jack and Ryan will be chomping at the bits jumping at me at this, but from what I understand, the money that's brought in via the tourism elements and the actual competition elements, if you like, of when a rally comes to town, doesn't actually go into natural resources budgets. That goes into tourism, and they're a completely separate thing, and they don't kind of cross over in any way, shape or form. So they're not really interested in what money it brings in. They're only interested in what money it takes out of their budget. And again, while we all know that rallying coming to town brings a lot of money, Ryan, they're not interested in that. They're just seeing this big black hole that they're desperately, if you pardon the obvious pun, that they're trying to fill.
Yeah, but the Forestry Commission's always been a money-making organisation, whether it was Scotland, Wales or England, and there's no way the costs have doubled over last year. So either they've just realised that they've been incorrect all this time, or like you said, they don't see that they need rallying, or simply they're trying to make money out of rallying. Because like I said, we've existed not always comfortably with the Forestry Commission over the years in the different areas. Then it has been, like I said, prices have been increasing year on year, but there has always been an agreement. And how can Wales be substantially different to England and Scotland unless they're suddenly trying to make money out of rallying, or like you said, actually trying to push rallying out of the Welsh Forest?
I don't know. Jack, have you got anything more on this before we move on?
I think it's just important to add that, you know, this is affecting everyone, and it's a really circular thing. It's, you know, you can look at GB up the top, and yes, you know, GB, there are doubts over GB as to whether they can put a separate deal together if the master agreement can't be signed. You know, the future is very sort of uncertain for GB, and it's circular as well, because if we do get a deal to put GB together, you know, I've spoken to Alvin Evans for the piece in Sport News this week, and as he quite rightly points out, GB may go ahead, but if we lose national rallying, where's the interest going to come from for GB? How is GB relevant in Wales if we have no rallying industry anymore there? You know, it's just, if it goes overnight, we've got no spectators, we've got no car builders, you know, we've got none of the preparation companies that we see in Wales. Is the interest still going to be there for GB to stay in Wales? And that could really put the future of the event in doubt, I think.
Now, we did reach out to Nicky Grist. We were going to get Nicky on to talk to us about this, because Nicky Grist Motorsport, obviously Nicky Grist, the, you know, world-famous co-driver at the end of the day as well, he's got very, very vocal on this. He's been involved in social media and everything else. Unfortunately, Nicky's away today when we record this programme, but certainly reaching out to some people around Nicky, they do feel that there's going to be another layer to this story almost next week, so it may be better to get Nicky on next week anyway. So we did reach out to Nicky, and all being well, we will have Nicky Grist on as well to talk to us about this particular issue next week. Now, speaking of issues, let's talk bogeys. And I don't mean up your nose. Right. Bogey time. I'm going to ask Ryan Champion, because I know Ryan Champion knows an awful lot more about bogey times than probably Jack and I. So, Ryan, for the uninitiated, explain to our lovely listeners, if they don't know, obviously. If they do know, then they can go and put the kettle on or something at this point. But explain what the bogey time is.
However many years it's been for the last 30 or 40 years of rallying, your stage time is the time it takes you to cover the stage in theory, but there is also a minimum time and a maximum time. The maximum time, if anybody goes off the road, they get exactly that. They get a stage maximum, which might be your running time plus 15 minutes, or it depends on the length of the stage, but there is a maximum time. But there's also a minimum time, and the minimum time is effectively worked out by an average speed, and in the UK we're not allowed to average more than 70 miles an hour. Now, why is that? Well, this comes back to insurance. So this is a deal that the MSA did with the various insurance parties a number of years ago now. This is a regulation that's been in place for a long time, where you can't exceed 70 miles an hour on the stages. So over the years, we've seen more and more chicanes built into stage rallies in this country. For me, it's just a way of getting around the regulation, because it actually means that you must be averaging much more than 70 in areas of the stage if you've got to bring the speed right down with chicanes. And chicanes is another debate which I'm sure we'll come on to in a while. But for example, in the North Yorkshire Forest, we've been through all this many times because we have probably some of the fastest gravel stages in the UK. And unfortunately, over the years, we've got more and more chicanes in place, which unfortunately, they really hold back the slowest cars and actually help the quickest cars, because normally you're accelerating from a standstill up to high speed, slowing right down for a chicane again. So it actually aids the faster cars. But more and more chicanes have been put into place to bring this average speed down again. Now, why has it never raised itself for British Championship rallies? Generally because they've been run to international regulations, and that has its own different set of regulations that it works to, with a different way of working out the average speed. So it hasn't been an issue when we've been running as an international British Championship, but now we're just running to MSA rules and it's created this problem.
Jack, you were in the service. It's very weird when you're doing a rally yourself. And I was doing a rally and I was kind of in it. And when you're in it, you don't kind of get a feel for what's going on, the kind of general kind of tittle-tattle, if you're supposed, of the service park and what's going on and everything else. You were around the service park when all this stuff was starting to break. Obviously, just for those who are unaware, I think it was the first three stages where we had four or five cars that effectively didn't record a time. They cleaned the stage, is the term that's used. So they got the bogey time, not the time that they cleared the stages in. What was the feeling around the service park when this started coming in, Jack?
There was a lot of misunderstanding in general to start with. Some of the foreign drivers didn't really understand what a bogey time was. I mean, it's another problem that hasn't really reared its head over abroad. I mean, a lot of countries do still have the bogey time type situation, but they, you know, it's like Ryan said, a lot of rallies don't come across the problem. But yeah, there was a bit of there was upset really, because some of the teams put so much money and so much effort into dragging the cars down to the rally, and then to turn up and try and compete and go as quick as possible. And then if you do that, you arrive and, you know, we've got people like Alvin Evans and Frederick Olin, who are world championship standard drivers. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And they've turned up to compete at the highest level. And what has actually happened is they've been matched on times by a piece of paper. So, you know, no matter how fast they've gone, it's irrelevant really, and it did cause quite a bit of upset with the teams and drivers really.
Well, I was just going to say, following on from that, one story that's at the front page of MN again, you know, not only was the crisis with regards to Welsh rallying, there's also potentially a crisis, I suppose, that DMAC British Rally Team, of course, which you could argue, well, Elvin Evans is the lead driver along with Max Batten, and I suppose is his number two. Dick McCormack has come out and said, unless things change, we will pull the squad out.
Yeah, well, Dick was very vocal in what he thought about the situation, and, you know, at the end of the day, this all comes down to the fact that the BRC has been very successful and they've got a lot of very quick drivers in the quickest cars. And, you know, I do feel sorry for the organisers in the sense that the last time we had proper cars going through Kielder with proper drivers, no disrespect to anyone who's done the event before, but the last time, you know, we've really had these kind of speeds was probably 2005 in the British Championship, the last time we had wheel cars. So, you know, I do feel sorry for the organisers, and it is difficult to work out what an average day time should be and stuff like that when you've not really had the cars go through the forest before. But at the same time, you know, it's a, you know, the championship's got a reputation, and it's becoming well known internationally. it's bounced back very quickly after the year off, and you know, we've got some of the best drivers in the world, like I said, already competing at the front. So for issues like this to come in and affect the championship is really, you know, something which needs to not happen again, which is something that Alvin Evans has, you know, said openly. So.
Ryan, I guess the clue, I suppose, in what Jack said there is the fact that it's getting recognised internationally, this championship now, which we keep talking about, and which is great, but it's not effectively an international championship. It's run, as you've just been pointing out to us, it's been running as a national championship, or, you know, a national A rather championship.
Yeah.
And there's the problem.
You've absolutely hit the nail on the head. In 2005 with World Rally Cars, it was an international rally. In 2006 with Group N Cars, I know we were averaging more than 70 miles an hour in some stages. I know we were, but it was an international rally, so that didn't matter. And like you said, the key problem is we're now running to national rules. And, you know, the organisers of the Scottish rally now, I'm sure, will be looking at putting extra chicanes in. And unfortunately, as a temporary measure, that's the only thing you can do when you've got fast stages. It's not ideal. Nobody wants to see it. But unfortunately, if you run into national rules, that's how it is. But, you know, I think the plan all along was to get the BRC established again and then run it to international regulations, which should alleviate some of this problem.
Yeah. Now, I suppose, is it unfair of me at this point to kind of say this? As a competitor, I feel like I can, because I paid my money. My frustration with what happened over the weekend, we're not in an R5 car. We're not in a four-wheel drive Group N car. We're in a two-wheel drive Group N car. And some may say we're at the back of the field for a jolly. To some degree, we are. But by the same token, we pays our money, and as much as everybody else. And, you know, to be told on the Saturday night that we wouldn't be getting additional chicanes put in, to be then be told on Sunday morning that was going to change, and then to encounter one of those additional chicanes, which, in all honesty, very, very few people got round. And then when we got there, we were effectively kind of submerged in one of them, and we didn't get out, and that was 3 miles from the end of the rally. I can't even put into words, in all seriousness, how upset and how frustrating that was, having gone through what we'd gone through to get there on that particular rally. And I think something needs to happen where, you know, when a statement is put out on a Saturday evening that there's not going to be any artificial methods used to slow the cars down. Obviously, that happened, and the chicanes, where they were put in, they were put in on junctions where logging trucks were going. And you know, all joking aside, not to put too fine a point on it, they suck it off, they suck you right in, and there's nothing you can do about it. You're stuck, and you haven't got a four-wheel drive car, you haven't got a high-powered two-wheel drive car, and you're stuck. And, you know, I've got a photograph of my car with another car, all kind of stranded around this chicane. That was a last-minute entry, and I think it was a panic that was put in by all parties, and they panicked far too quickly, and there could have been other ways to sort this out. What other ways? Yeah. I really don't know.
Yeah, I completely understand the frustrations of competitors like yourself. You know, it was to put the statement out on the Saturday night that nothing was going to change, and then, you know, not to go back to the R5 cars again, but when they found out in the morning that when they turned up they were going out to chicanes on the stages. You know, they had 5 or 10 minutes to prepare before they were heading out onto the stages. So, you know, it wasn't an ideal situation. I think the organisers were well caught off guard by something they didn't expect to affect their rally. You know, like Ryan said briefly before, you know, this is something that's, you know, bogies have been developed by organisers. So when they design stages, it doesn't usually tend to affect the rallies too much, and we don't see it as a problem. What's happened here is, you know, the organisers have been completely caught off guard by cars that are going quicker than we've probably ever seen before in a national rally context. And they've been completely caught out. So I don't expect this problem to continue too much over the rest of the season, but what we do need to learn from this is just that, really. We need to take this as a lesson and make sure that this really does not happen again, because it has made sort of mockery of the event. And what we've missed is some of the finest rallying in this country. You know, I've never been to Kilda before, and I was lucky enough to do the recce, and the stages were absolutely incredible, and I don't think anyone had argued with that.
Nope,
back.
Not at all.
And another thing we've seen is, we've seen Frederick Olin and Elvin Evans You know, obviously Elvin had the puncture, but we've missed two world championship standard guys. You know, Elvin's leading WRC 2. You know, those two had a great battle in Sweden, and they were right near the top, the pair of them, and we've got them in the British Championship, which has been relaunched this year, and we've missed a potential battle there. We've missed a potential Elvin comeback. You know, we all discussed after the rally by text, didn't we, whether Elvin would have been and would, had enough to catch back up, and I don't think he probably did, but I think we were robbed of a charge in Elvin Evans on the Sunday morning, attempting to try and cut that gap, and that's another thing. So yeah, just from my point of view, it's just a case of you know, really unlucky sense of what happened with the organisers, but all the organisers in the Championship need to make sure that they take heed of this and that it doesn't happen again.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, a couple of things I want to crack on with a few other bits and pieces. Ryan, have you just been colouring in? Because I could hear something, and it sounded like you were colouring something in.
Colouring in?
Yeah, it sounded like you were drawing or colouring something or something. I don't know.
I was writing a couple of notes down, actually.
Was you? I could hear it. You were scribbling away. I was thinking, Ryan's got a few points here, but I'm going to move on to a different subject just to mess with them now, anyway. have you got anything you want to say before we move on, Ryan?
No, just one thing that sprung to mind there. I don't think DMACC would have been quite so vocal had Elvin been in the lead at that point. That's just one point I'll make.
And on that bombshell, we're going to move on. We're going to move on to Toyota that have started testing, Jack.
Yes. We debated this the other week, didn't we? Whether it was, you know, whether it was time to start getting worried that we haven't seen Toyota out. But as Dave Evans has finally put together this week, you know, they have been out testing. Hannonen and Mäkinen himself have been testing the car in Finland, so it's great to see that car out. We haven't got any pictures yet because they've been testing in North Finland, and there's not been... Toyota are trying to keep the car as secret as possible for as long as possible, I think. So I think that's probably the reason why we haven't seen any pictures. But nice to know the car's out. Tommy seems to be happy with the progress they're making. And Juvo is obviously a very capable driver doing the testing as well. So, yeah, good to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And supposedly, and I'm not too sure about this one, we talk about young drivers and young drivers getting opportunities, right? But Kyle Rovanperä apparently could be in line to be doing some of the endurance kilometres on that car.
Yeah, well, like you said, getting younger and younger. 15's definitely
we're screwed, aren't we, mate? We're screwed. Might as well just admit it.
Having said that, having been lucky enough to do some of that development mileage in the past, to do like maybe 500 kilometres, 1,000 kilometres on one component, it seems like a nice job to begin with. But after you've done about 400 kilometres and you've still got to do another 100 laps of whatever test track you're on, it's not always the nicest job. So a young guy like that who wants all the mileage you can get, I can see where they're coming from.
Well, I guess this young man won't be too concerned about a story, Jack, with regards to 2017 WRC drivers. The FIA will decide on 2017 drivers. The super license story's kind of come about again, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, it's reared its head again, hasn't it? You know, we've heard about super licenses maybe being introduced, haven't we? And I think some of the drivers were calling for them, actually. I think Chris Meek who came out a while ago and said that he thought they should have super licenses. I'll have to check that. But I do remember some of the drivers coming out and saying that. But yeah, it's going to be taken on a case-to-case basis by the FIA. And, you know, Jarmo Mahonen and those kind of guys are looking at things and deciding who's going to be able to get into these cars, because we've already talked about how quick they're going to be and, well, potentially how quick they're going to be. Obviously, we haven't seen them out properly yet, but yeah, that's pretty much it, really.
Now, right, I don't know what your thoughts are on this particular story. I don't know whether you, obviously, we've been over it a few times, but and I think where the concern lies is the fact that, you know, you or I could, well, I suppose it's slightly different with you, but someone like me could pick up the phone and ring Malcolm Wilson and say, right, I'm coming up, I've just won the lottery, or I've just won this, and come and put a wedge of cash on the table and be starting Rally Portugal in a World Rally Car.
Yeah, which is exactly what's happened in the past. I mean, that's, as we've talked about before, that's one thing that's very different with rallying to circuit racing. For example, you know, you can go and buy last year's world championship winning car and go and compete with it at a national level, at a club level. So, you know, I guess the idea is this is designed to stop that. But like I said, it's certainly something that we've seen happen a lot. And when we had the 2 litre cars, obviously they had, you know, certainly at the time, they had a lot higher pace than the early 1600 cars. Obviously the later World Rally cars develop constantly. We're probably back to where those 2 litre cars were now. But it's an interesting one, isn't it, to decide who can drive these cars. It's also interesting because obviously some of these teams are built on commercially building these cars. M Sport, for example, is a commercial operation, and M Sport will want to sell 2017 WRC cars eventually. So as much as I can see them stopping it initially, I'm sure, for example, M Sport will be pushing hard to see these cars in customer hands in the not-too-distant future.
Now, Jack last week made an announcement that he wasn't going to co-drive anymore, and the next thing he's going to be doing is driving. Will you be applying for a super licence, Jack?
Absolutely not. Very good, Tony. No, I won't be. That's not something I'm looking at doing. One thing I will add to the story, in all seriousness, though, is that, you know, Dave Evans has said in the story that they will not be available for events outside of the WRC. And I find that quite interesting from my position, because, you know, we're seeing a lot of championships moving to different regulations at the minute, aren't we, in national rally, and we're seeing a lot of people moving to R5 spec cars and stuff like that. And, you know, one of the big countries to do that recently was Ireland with the Irish Tarmac Championship. They've favoured R5 cars to go at the front of their field rather than WRC cars. And if this is the case, if we're not going to see 2017 WRC cars being bought locally, that's really given quite a lot of punch to the Irish Tarmac Championship's decision to move to R5s, hasn't it? Because, you know, if the market's going to dry up for the 2017 cars, and we're not going to see the latest spec WRC cars coming into the country, I think there will be some fallout over the next few months with teams like Enbot, who want to sell cars, because that is taking away part of their business.
Yeah, very valid point. Very valid point. Right, gentlemen, it's at this point where we're going to have a cheeky break, and then we're going to come back with Gus Greensmith, who's going to talk to us about his adventures on the Pirelli and what he's about to get into on Rally Portugal. We've got South McCartney, who's going to be talking to us about the other major event that was happening in the UK, which you could argue robbed us perhaps of some of the potential frontrunners from the Pirelli Rally, which was the Killarney Rally, and Keith Cronin went there, and Sam Moffat and Josh Moffat went there as well, and he's going to tell us all about that. And then, after all that, both Jack, Ryan and me are going to do Our Any Other Business at the end of the programme. That's where we're going to do it now. We're going to have three of us all at the same time do Our Any Other Business. So sit back, relax, enjoy what I was talking to Gus Greensmith, always a great guest, and also Zav, and then we'll be back with Any Other Business.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate, call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. It's good to be back with a new friend of the show, almost. Last time we had him on, I said he was going to be our guy in the DMAC Drive Trophy this year. And sure enough, he is going to be our guy. And I thought I'd get him on before he starts his travels and starts his adventure. So welcome back to Absolute Rally, Gus Greensmith.
Thank you very much. Nice to be back.
It is good to be back. It's good. Do you know what, Gus? I'm not just saying this, not just because you're our man now in this championship, right? But there's always a tinge of envy whenever I speak to you, Gus, because you've got cool hair, you've got a cool lifestyle, and you're also winning rallies normally. Now, the reason why I bring that up is because at the end of the Pirelli Rally, which you just had, which was the third round of the British Rally Championship, you were a man who was disappointed with second, and I was fascinated by your disappointment. And I want to ask you about that first, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Where was the I think, you know, obviously your main focus is the World Championship this year, and, you know, you're using these events, obviously, to get yourself match fit and sharpen your notes up, yada, 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 and everything else, and you still seem genuinely disappointed by what I thought was a very, very good second place.
I wasn't disappointed by the second place necessarily. Well, I hate finishing second anyway, but that wasn't the reason I was disappointed. The puncture, there's nothing you can do. It was just a rock and eclipse, and there's nothing you can do about that. That's just rallying. You just have to deal with it. The thing I was disappointed with was we've put a lot of preparation into this event, and I've had a lot of support from my team, Alex. We've put so much hard work in, and I decided to forget everything that I'd learned this rally for some reason. All the time I've spent. So my driving was pretty poor, I thought, and and my notes that I made were pretty poor. So I was really disappointed in myself, really. But there was positives to take. I had a really, to me, it was the worst rally I've driven in a very long time, and we still finished second and set some fastest times. So it wasn't all negative, but I think I was quite hard on myself. But I always am, because I'm always searching to improve, and when I'm not improving, it annoys me.
No, you know, genuinely, I'm looking at the stage times here, Gus, and I'm not just saying this because you're on, but they're very, very strong times, you know, when you start looking what else is going on. You know, you start looking at, you're mixing it with R5s and things like that in, you know, a small front-wheel drive car. That's not to be too disappointed with. And obviously, your focus is elsewhere. It's not like you're fighting for this championship, is it?
No, it's not. And I had to say in an interview to the MSA, I said I had to come up with some random rubbish to find some positive. I think I said it was good for the championship, but I don't think I'm actually carrying it on. I think I'm only doing one or two more rounds. But no, it was positive in some ways, the pace. And I was fighting up there. And don't get me wrong, Rob and Sindre and Matthias are no slow drivers. They're incredibly fast. So to be mixed up there, and especially against what I think and other people think are faster cars, the Opals have got a lower power and a fast rally, it really suits them. But it was just the fact, I thought Sindre drove really well. Like when we were talking, he was doing the things that I wasn't doing, which I knew I should have been doing. So I think that's what annoyed me.
Yeah. But obviously, moving forward now, you've got the Pirelli out the way, which you're going from... We went through changeable conditions, did we, on the Pirelli? We had a little bit of snow, and we had a little bit of rain, a little bit of sleet, I think, at times. And you're going to warmer climbs now. Just tell us a little bit what's happened next.
So I literally, the night I got back after the Pirelli, first thing I did was try and forget about the rally and put some onboards on for Portugal. Started watching them, correcting them, and then since then me and Alex have worked together on simplifying them, making them more significant in my memory. So we've been doing that, and then this weekend we'll be heading over to Portugal to do a two-day test with RMC before heading back, and then heading back over again for the rally.
So, see, the notes always fascinate me, and I think there's so much what we all could be better at them, I think, and the fact that you've recognised and stuff. Is it a case of taking stuff out for you? Do you find you're trying to take on too much information, or are you not putting enough in? What are the tweaks you've had to make?
Well, the problem for me was I came from karting, and what I would love to do is dissect the corner by inch and describe exactly how I'm supposed to drive and exactly when I'm supposed to enter it and at what speed. But when I tried to do that last year, my notes became so complicated. There was a specific example in Germany where I had 13 words for one corner, and wow. Now I'd put it as flat four left or something like that. But so that was where my problems were last year, especially in Germany. That's why I couldn't find great pace when they were so complicated. So that's why I was desperate to work with Alex. And since then, we've worked at simplifying them, yet still having the information that I need, but not too much. And we saw in GB when I didn't have any problems what the pace was like. That was all pace notes. That wasn't me driving. That was just all pace notes.
Because if you know, you can be as fit and you can be as seat sharp, as a term that I like to use, where you know it means you are in the car, you know, regular and everything else. But your brain can only do so much. You know, anybody's brain can only do so much. So you know, when your brain's computing, driving the car as quickly as possible, and then it's also taking on board that information that's being fed in via your co-driver, there is a plateau. There's only so much that it can actually do, isn't there?
Yeah, the important thing for me is I have to, when I find a rhythm in a car, the car can not necessarily be handling that well, but mentally, and it helps me a lot, because I feel I'm flowing the corners, my lines are good, my speed's good, and then at the end I'm still positive and I just need to make a few little tweaks to alter the car. So for me, it's about finding that rhythm and trying to find a flow through every stage. It's hard for every stage because stages, are completely different to one another. But if you put the effort in at home, which I'm trying to do at the moment, trying to achieve this flow, then that's when it'll make the difference.
Now, as I say, we move forward. The DMAC Drive trophy now it is the thing to do, it seems, and you know, and it's a great thing to see. We've got a new batch coming in almost. You were rookie of the year, of course, in 2015. Here we are in 2016 now with a new batch of drivers coming in. And where do you see the competition in this year's kind of group?
I think the competition is going to be as strong as last year. I think we've got really an extremely experienced driver in terms of WRC events, Bernardo Souza. So you've got to be looking at him, and obviously I'm going to try and learn bits and bobs from him, because I always try and pick little things from each people which I think work. So that'll be helpful. And then you've got really fast drivers like Ocean, John. Can't forget Max, he won Portugal last year. There's a lot of really good drivers. And then you never know, there's some other drivers which I've not heard of. I've watched their onboard, but you never know, they can just turn up and surprise you.
Absolutely. Max is the one that we keep, I suppose, we can't forget about, because it sounds odd to say that, because one of his surname, and two, the fact that he's done a lot of rallying in Fiesta R2s, but he comes to the British Rally Championship this year and perhaps hasn't kicked on the way people thought he was naturally going to. Do you think that move back to the R2 Fiesta, he will find now easier, having done kind of three rounds of the British Rally Championship in an R5 car?
Well, I don't think it's really for me to comment on what Max thinks is right, but the thing is, Max is an incredibly fast driver and incredibly smooth. So I don't have a doubt that once he gets to Portugal, he'll be right on the pace. I just think a step up to an R5 is such a huge task, and he's been putting with such a limelight on him. I think it's an incredibly difficult job to do, and to be honest, I think he's done quite a good job.
Yeah, no, good on you. So, with regards to the test, I think I like to put it down, because we have rally fans that listen to the programme, and we have people who compete, and I try to kind of cater for everybody at various levels. You're going away to do a 2-day test with RMC, and what will that test actually involve? Is it settings that you're going to carry over to the car, you know, when you go over to Portugal? What are you trying to achieve?
Well, one of the things is the gravel is different to England, and how you drive on that gravel is completely different. And you've got to remember that Portugal is incredibly rough, so when you've done a full day, the road ruts, and you get an idea for what it's going to be like. The main reason I'm going over there is for tuition, because last year, one of my weak points is technical stages, just getting the drive and being smooth and keeping the wheels straight. So I'll be having some tuition whilst I'm over there, and then the final day will be a bit of tuition and fine-tuning the setup for when I get to Portugal the following week.
I think I find it fascinating that you openly talk about tuition, because not many people do, and I always find that fascinating. And the reason why is because, and I've made this reference so many times, is that, you know, to use a football analogy, Ronaldo still has coaches, Messi still has coaches, and yet with rallying, it seems that people don't really want to embrace the fact that somebody can sit alongside them and point things out that perhaps we don't see, or you wouldn't see as a driver, because you're too busy driving.
Yeah, I understand why people don't, because some people are just stubborn and don't like being told what to do. And I'm stubborn. I'm stubborn all the time when people tell me. But the thing is, you've got to realise, the people that I'm using to give me tuition have a lot more experience than me and are faster than me. So they're obviously doing something that I'm not doing. So why would you not listen to them and not try what they're telling you? If you try it and it doesn't work, then what have you lost? It's a test.
Yeah, no. A great response. As I say, I think it's something that, you know, it seems to be shied away from, and I've never quite understood why. You know, I've sat alongside as many people as what I can over the years, even doing the bits and pieces that I've done, just to watch what they do and just to listen to what they do. And again, you know, I always remember being sat with Pentti Ericola, and this, I'm going back probably when you were still probably dribbling your food, I think it has to be said, but I'm going back that far, and I used to get coaching off Pentti, and I always remember doing something with a handbrake turn, and he stopped me and he said, I really like what you've done, I wouldn't have thought about doing it that way. And to be honest with you, I've dined out on that for the rest of my life. But you know, it just goes to show that, you know, we're never too old to learn, and you know, people can take different things from different people's driving and different techniques. If you were to kind of try and sum up your style, if we were going to try and give you a style, what do you think your style would be, you know, if we were going to use another driver?
What, to relate myself to another driver?
Yeah.
I don't know, to be honest. I'd like to say low, but that's not true. I don't know. I think when I find a really good rhythm, then, I mean, I can be incredibly smooth and I really think about my driving. So I don't really know. I think I'll have to get into R5 before I know what my driving's like. But the fastest way is never sideways. It's spectacular, but it's just not fast. So I'd probably like to say I'd be liked along the French drivers, because they always on gravel, they're trying to never be sideways and just be straight. So yeah, that's always my goal when I come out of a corner, not to be sideways.
Which is why when you answered my text before about sorting this out, you answered me in French. There you go. You see, it's flowing out already without you even realising it, my mate.
Yeah, that's the one.
Listen, we're going to let you go. Again, I think Pirelli was a great result for you, mate, but obviously, you know, bigger things now. Let's focus on Portugal and we'll catch you up after Portugal, okay?
Brilliant.
Gus, thanks so much for joining us on Absolute Rally, and we'll catch up soon.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally, and welcome back to a friend of the show, and he is a friend of the show, Zav McCartan. Hello.
Hi, how are we doing?
And we're all right. And now we get you on irregularly to talk about the Irish Tarmac series. And while we've all been kind of had our head in the sand looking at what happened last weekend on the British Rally Championship, of course, there was also some BRC front runners that decided to make the decision and stay on home turf and go and do the next round of the Irish Tarmac.
Well, Keith Cronin for one, but yeah, as you say, it was the fourth round of the Clonakilty Black Pudding Championship last weekend in Killarney. Killarney run a great event once again. It was nice to see on the Friday night people in the town and a real, real buzz. Paul Nagle and some of the rally dignitaries were there. It was a very, very good event.
I was just looking through again the quality and the impressiveness of some of the drives, and one that screams out straight away to me, and I'm sure there's a story behind this, but just looking at Callum Devine, eighth overall in an Opel Adam R2.
Yeah, I mean, Callum was one of the first, from memory, I think, last year to move across to the Arum, and immediately, you know, dialed into it and started setting some stunning times. And I mean, as we know, certainly in Irish Tarmac, on dry roads, they're a little pocket rocket. And I know that's an overused expression, but, you know, despite the pocket rocket, you know, Callum is a seriously talented young kid. And I mean, there seems to be a dearth of talent in the island at the moment, which is great. You know, north and south, and you have, you know, the recent launch of Team Ireland, which I know Art has been on and spoken about. I mean, that's a great support. They have great plans now, not just for rallying, but in circuit racing, to promote and to push and to do the best they can for, you know, for Irish motorsport, north and south. And there was quite a few. Every rally, somebody, you know, jumps up in front and makes you sit up and take notice. And unlike some of the other championships, you know, we have a great national section in most of the internationals, which is a sort of contradictory word, but it's not. I mean, the Irish events are renowned for some of the national entries. Great junior entry and a great historic entry. I mean, the cartel.ie rally at the Lakes, you know, really, really did have it all last weekend. And of course, you know, in a couple of weeks, we jump forward, or, you know, next month, we're into the Jewel, and it'll be Donegal.
Which is, again, anybody who's a rally fan, as soon as you hear Donegal, that's it. Everybody goes weak at the knees, don't they? Again, it's one of those, you know, we talk Circuits of Ireland, things like that, but Donegal's got that. It couldn't sound any more Irish if it tried as well. I think that's what gets me about it. It's just got this feel about it, hasn't it?
No, it has. And I mean, you know, it's very easy to highlight some of the events, but all of them in their own individual way are different, they're special. I mean, Galway, the opening round of the championship, you know, great organising club, but it can forever be smitten with weather. But what that does is produce a really difficult, a really hard trying event. West Cork, which has just come in again, another event, the circuit. We all know about the circuit and how well that was received. Three or four different championships running in that event, and the feedback from it was very good. This weekend we had the Rally of the Lakes. We had a great rally. Saturday was, you know, great weather, warm and sunny, you know, with the odd cloud here. And then Sunday, of course, we had mist, and, you know, the likes of Moles Gap, visibility was down in places, and it was a real mixture, a real test for the crews.
Now, I know on previous rounds there's been this kind of trade-off towards, you know, the modern R5 car, which has been embraced, I think, the world over almost, and obviously the older WRC machinery. Now, that seems to have that seems to have reared its head again almost on this one. That Donnacchelli in the older Focus seems to have pretty much had it all his own way on this one.
Well, I mean, Gary, you see, whenever the R5 rule was announced at the start of the year, there was handbags were launched out through windows, and, you know, dinner tables upset and awe. But it seemed to have settled down, and what you do have now, you have, you know, the few WRC cars, and I mean, as you would know, on tarmac, when you look at some of the Belgium events, the French events, the Italian events, on dry tarmac, or even damp tarmac, there is nothing as spectacular as a WRC car driven at the limit. Now, Donnacchelli over the last sort of 18 months has really dialed into the Focus. He moved up from predominantly Mitsubishi. He did the odd event in a Group N Subaru and then went into the Focus. I think he sold it and then bought it back again. I think he did the odd event in an S10 or an S11. But Donna has dialed into how they need to be driven. Gary, if you've seen any of Gary's footage on the limit, is just, it's a sight to behold. But what that has done is the opening up of the R5s has allowed more drivers to come in. I mean, Aaron McKeel has moved to the Skoda S2000 on the back of the R5 rule. Alistair Fisher, who, if you like, finished second on the Rally of the Lakes, but actually took maximum points in the championship. You know, the Moffats are back, and Stephen Wright. You know, Alan Ring has moved to an R5. And what that has done is bring people in and provide a better spread across the event, and I think you'll find that as the year goes on, there's now stabilisation of the rules, which is good. People will now know for next year, some of the really good Group N runners, Owen Murphy, for example, he's now into a Skoda as well, and that's bringing a really nice mixture right through the events on all of the championship rounds this year. So far, and of course, it was a bogey-free weekend for the Rally of the Lakes too, you know.
A bogey-free weekend. How very apt that term is. Of course, we've been talking about it at the top of the programme as well, which, again, I think the word bogey, I don't think anybody has used it and explained it to so many people in the last 72 hours as what I have, because I don't think we were familiar with the term bogey to the uninitiated until recently, were we?
No, and for those that didn't have any idea of what the term bogey meant, there was a couple of explanations on social media, and I think maybe we should just maybe leave it. You know, as you say, we've spoken about it at the show, and the dog's been put out, the dog's back in now, and it's dry, the weather's good, so maybe we'll just park it there and leave it at that and learn from it and move on.
Very succinctly put. Now, I want to talk about, obviously, how the championship's looking now. Donnacchelli, again, seems to be in control of this championship, but, you know, we've got Alistair Fisher second on this particular event, and Alistair seems to be driving with, what's the best way, almost let off the leash, because previously he's done Junior World Championship, obviously he's done British Rally Championship and things like that, and I think possibly the Irish Tarmac's possibly a little bit more fun for him now, as opposed to trying to achieve titles and things, shall we say.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've highlighted there, you know, one of the issues that was bandied about at the start of the year is the championship and who qualifies for it and who gets points. You know, Donna and Gary, if you like, are eligible to win events outright in the WRC cars, but they can't score points, unfortunately. Now, what that does mean, though, Alistair will be leading. I mean, Alistair and Gordy Noble finished second, but they would have taken maximum points at the weekend in their R5 in the Ford. Sam Moffat, you know, it's probably going to be good if I just run down the leaderboard. Donna Kelly won the event with Conor Foley. And second was Alistair Fisher, Gordy Noble in the R5. Third was Sam Moffat and Carl Atkinson in the Fiesta with Stephen Wright. And fourth, Fintan Cherry. Fifth was Alan Ring and Adrian Deasy. Sixth, we had Owen Murphy. Seventh, we had Aaron McHale. Eighth was Callum Devine. Ninth was David Guest in the Lancer. And the top 10 was rounded up by Joe Connolly, John Richard Connolly in the Fiesta R5. But taking maximum points was Alistair and Gordon Noble as they head for Donegal. Now, they take a lead in the championship. From what I can work out, Sam will move up. Josh didn't score points, and Keith Cronin had a terrible event. I mean, he lost somewhere in the region of 10 minutes at the start of the first stage, and he had a troubled weekend, most of the weekend, with down on power, or, you know, an engine not pulling clean. There was a slight misfire, I think, at one stage, and he just kept his foot to the floor. I mean, in fairness, we all know what Keith Cronin can do. You know, a former British Rally Championship winner in the Mitsubishi, and then in the, I think, in the Tech Sports Subaru. You know, Keith has got the talent, but, you know, ever since he had that shunt in Portugal when testing last year, he really hasn't had any rub of the green whatsoever. This weekend, as I say, there was a great battle, not only in if you like, in the sense of the top 10 as we've just run through there, but as a lot of people will know, there's just fierce a battle down through the national category. That was won this weekend by Eugene Negan and Sarah Whelan in the BMW 1M. M1. Now, that is a car, seemingly, that is sorted. Eugene has dabbled with other bits and pieces, but he took a very convincing one, just over 34 seconds ahead of Jack Newman in an Escort Mark II, with Liam Howlett also in an Escort. So, you know, those cars, Tony, still very popular, still eligible to compete in the national section of the International. In the historics, Frank Cunningham won with Ross Ford in the Ford Escort. David Goose was second. Tom Clark was in the Russell Brooks, ex-Russell Brooks Sunbeam Lotus. And then, of course, the junior category, which on most of the internationals nowadays is just a phenomenal entry and a way of bringing young drivers through who get to recce, make notes, compete on the international. That was won by Kieran O'Donoghue and Derek Buckler in one of the very popular Honda Civic Type R. Shane McCarthy, Tricia Grevy was second, and Eric Kalman and Aileen Kelly in a Peugeot finished third overall in the juniors. But Rally of the Lakes, yeah, once again, some of the really great stages that would, in times gone by, have been part of what would have been the old circuit. We were talking earlier on there about, you know, the old classics, Neil Gorton again, and Barnard. Then Sunday you had like Moles Gap, Ballabema. Ballabema proving crucial for Gary Jennings. And then in the afternoon you had Shannara at Carra Lake. But a very good event last weekend, and I'm not just judging from the social media side of it. You know, there was really reports on the event, not only from Highland Radio based in Donegal, Northwest, but Radio Kerry had on-the-hour reports running from 10 o'clock in the morning to the end of the day. So for those people who, you know, wouldn't have had maybe phone signal or that, as long as you go back to the car on the hour and headed to the next stage, you would have got your rally report and latest update. So a great event in Killarney last weekend, and very evident on social media. Great stages, very well organised and very well run.
You've just got a feel, haven't you, for Gary? You know, just looking at it, you know, first nine stages, fastest on every stage. And do we know more about what happened to Gary's car? Because, you know, he's been through the mill with that. Obviously, he had the fire, he rebuilt it, he's got it back, and you just, again, a bit like what we were talking about Keith Cronin before. You just kind of want him to have a little bit of luck, don't you?
Well, Gary's pace is always impressive. I mean, Gary will. That, and it goes back to what I was saying to you earlier. I mean, if anybody wants to flick through some of that famous tube channel and look at, you know, some of the Irish events and watch those WRC cars out over jumps and people not lifting, when they're driven on the limit, they are very spectacular. No less spectacular than the R5 on any car on a limit, but Gary in particular would drive to notes at maximum attack. They went off on a fast left hander over a bump. I think the car, you know, at that kind of speed on a fast left hander, the car got away and it went well down into the scenery over the hedge on the right hand side, and he was never going to get it out of there. But the thing was, Gary had lost 16 seconds. Donna Kelly took 16 seconds out of him on the previous stage. And, well, I was just thinking, right, okay, time for me to turn the wick up. Donna's turned the wick up this morning. And we're back to the old kidology and psychology of games, you know. One of the really famous ones for me personally, I was involved many years ago with Kenny McKinstry at the Sunseeker, and on the penultimate stage of the Sunseeker, you know, he had a real problem with that wire loom, which was causing the engine to overheat, but he deliberately made his way to the start line of the last stage, and Marcus Dodd saw him with the pressure on, and Kenny wasn't going any further. But he knew that if he got to the end of the last, the start of the last stage, you could put a bit of pressure on. And in due course, Marcus went off. So it's all about kidology and you know, how you feel at the start of the stage and trying to take time out, stamp your authority on the event. But I have no doubt that we'll see Gary in Donegal, probably with Rory Kennedy once again, to defend last year's win. But Donna, as we were saying earlier, has dialed into the focus. Donna had a couple of events last year where he'd been leading and you know, it had gone off. But Donna's drive was very smooth, very impressive. He did finish a fair distance. There was 20-odd seconds between himself and Alistair, but Donna was driving for the win. Alistair was driving for points. There was about 50 seconds between Alistair and Sam, and then there was a couple of minutes back to Stephen Wright. And you know, Alan Ring on his home event, Adrian Deasy. Alan, who would be synonymous with the Munster Joinery Mitsubishi, for those who would know that car. Alan has stepped up to do a couple of events in a Melvin Evans and Pretz, but has moved up to an R5 this year. And then, you know, you've Callum Devine and Yates in that little Opel Adam. And, yeah, it was a good event on the whole, definitely.
Right, now, while I've got you, because as I say, we have you infrequently frequent, if that even makes sense. Where do you see? Where do you see us at the moment, Zav? The rallying at the moment, whoever you speak to has got a different opinion on it. I personally feel things are good. I don't think they're as good as what perhaps we sometimes think they are. But on the whole, I think it's improved. How about you?
I would have to agree to a point. I think Hayden Padden's victory was enjoyed by so many people that somebody coming up, coming through, can actually do it. And that created a really feel-good factor about the sport. The fact that he did it on the last stage and basically he stuck it to Ogier. I'm not saying the WRC is perfect. They have the running order and everybody has an opinion on it in the press and everything else. But I think for rallying in general, that was great. That the homecoming he got in New Zealand at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, those are the real fans. Those are the likes of you and me. We'd get up and get out early and go and welcome somebody home. I think that's really, really good. The European Championship, the European Rally Championship, it's almost like a championship for not gentlemen drivers, but it has lost its way, in my opinion, a little bit. If you have a good R5 car, you can go and do reasonably well. You have standalone events coming up, like, for example, Apes, which will always get a great entry. You know, Freddie likes synonymous with that. So it has individual events. I think the Irish Tarmac Championship has definitely raised its game, as has the National. And some people might be listening into this and saying, well, of course you're going to say that. But they raised the game. Clonakilty are in the middle of a multi-year sponsorship deal with the Irish Tarmac Championship. Well, the Irish National Championship have brought on board their sponsor, Triton Showers, and the National Championship is sitting every event oversubscribed, full to the rafters, and the likes of Laura Fury or Laura McMenamin, who does the PR for that, have done a great job in raising the profile, and they've taken rallying outside the town and brought it to the people. People are a lot more aware about what rallying is. The VRC, I think it's unfair to sort of say anything about it, because I really think they need this year to get a year under their belt and look at next year. But you and I know the rallying world very well, and while it's great to see that, you know, you now have a multiple championship, it has boxes that still have to be ticked, I think, for some people. The weekend, okay, it is down to the event itself, and there was those issues, fair enough. But it's not perfect, but it probably will get there. So I think maybe in 18 months' time, 2 years' time, you could have a very healthy state of rallying. But on the whole, if it's like that dinner show on Channel 4, I would have to give rallying in general at the moment probably about an 8. the thing about it is some championships at the moment are being promoted by the competitors more so than the actual championship, and there needs to be another way of looking at it. You can't, as you know, you can't rely on social media for all forms of promotion. You know, there has to be promotion in the towns where the events are held. Somebody's going to come on and say, well, hold on a second. You know, Blackpool, we were in Blackpool for weeks beforehand. But that's predominantly to people who know the event happens wherever it happens. There's room for improvement in all areas, but of course that's always the way. And of course we can't forget that probably 99% of all organisers, supporters, volunteers are just that, they're volunteers. There's very, very few people full-time employed in the world of rallying or rallycross or Formula One or DTC or BTCC or whatever. So a lot of the people that are dependent on for organisation and running are volunteers. So on the whole, rallying is in a reasonably healthy state, definitely.
I think, as I say, there's a momentum there. I just hope the momentum actually continues on for all concerned, because we need it to. We need it to. Right, Sav, we've got to that point where we've probably gone about 20 minutes over time, but as we always do, it's always lovely to catch up. And let's have a little catch up, probably around Donegal would be a good time, I think.
Yeah, we could do a pre-Donegal one. I believe that, again, a fairly full entry. The regulations came out last week. I know for a fact that accommodation up in Letterkenny is very minimal. It's packed out. People book it from year to year. So I think it's shaping up to be very good. And Irish Tarmac Rallying is very good. Irish National Rallying is very good. And it's nice to see everybody do so well in the BRC. And yeah, we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
Happy days. Sav, thanks for joining us as usual on Absolute Rally, and we'll catch up soon.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Good to have Gus on. As I say, he's our man in the DMAC Drive Trophy. He's going to be joining us between the rounds and telling us what's going on. And very, very open and honest young man as ever. And as I say, Zaf McCartan as well, who's going to dip in and out with some of the Irish Tarmac coverage for us. But we're at the end of the programme, and we're at the end of the programme for any other business. And I've got tons of any other business, even though it sound like I did my own any other business in the whole Pirelli thing. I didn't. One thing we didn't do, by the way, was tell people who won the Pirelli rally. I don't know whether anybody actually noticed that. Everybody's just kind of heard all three of us rant and talk about stuff. But Frederick Arling won the rally with Matthew Wilson, who again, we've not really mentioned Matthew. Matthew kind of dusted off the overalls and jumped in the car, of course, which came back from Rally Argentina that Elvin Evans was using out there. And he got an amazing second place after not really done much for a good few years. And Elvin Evans was third as well. So that's where the top three were. Now in the junior section, Rob Duggan was in the R2 Adam, as it is. You've got to be careful. So it's the Vauxhall Adam in this country. Gus Greensmith was second, and we talked about that. And as I say, Gus was very, very disappointed with second when we spoke to him on Sunday evening. But it seems to have got his head round it now anyway. And Sindra, how do you pronounce the surname of Sindra? Jack, come on, help me out. Furusef was third in the Twingo, which shows there's still life in the old dog, yes. So I just thought I'd give everybody a little bit of a roundup. Anybody's wondering where I was nowhere. So there you go. There you go. Right. So, Jack Benyon, you didn't have any other business last week, and you reckon it's a corker this week. No pressure. Jack Benyon's any other business.
I don't know if I said it was a corker.
Yes, you did.
Did I really say that?
Yeah, you said it was.
Okay.
Yeah, you said it was top draw. So.
Okay. Right. My business, as usual, is a bit left field, but my previous column for this week's MN was robbed by bogeys. Obviously, that had to be the subject of talk, but the original column was to be done on a driver who's won an event along with the likes of Colin McRae, Rich Burns, Russell Brooks and Ari Vatanen, and that is Ryan Champion. So my end of the business this week is on the 2006 Pirelli Carlisle Rally, which Ryan Champion won, and I thought, having heard Tony in jest joke about it so much and not actually talk about what happened on the event, that my column would describe the events of the Pirelli Carlisle Rally and what actually happened, and give the listeners a bit of an idea about what actually happened on the rally, because it was a... And feel free to jump in at any point, Ryan, because you might potentially...
I'll be honest with you, his headset's probably fell off now, because his head will be starting to swell now, so we've got to be careful with this one, Jack. I'll be honest, I'm cringing already, but go on.
You're cringing? it's because you've given him so much stick for the past few weeks about this rally, and I thought, do you know what, Ryan, good win, you deserve it. I'm going to talk about the event.
I can't believe he's a pulling rank on me. Go on, Jack. You crack on, my friend.
So, Ryan, you started by going second on the first day of the rally, where David Higgins was quickest, as Mark Higgins was sweeping the road as the reigning champion. He went on to have problems, as did pretty much everyone in the rally, including yourself. Gwyndaf Evans was in there as well, and he rounded out the day second behind David Higgins. And let's have a look at my notes. So you took second from Gwyndaf Evans, who had problems with gearbox. And I just want to read out the quote from the end of the report from Ryan. It says, the gearbox started playing up on the final stages and eventually stripped fifth. We also had a puncture on stage 8 and another on stage 9. The last one bent the suspension and caused us brake trouble. Other than that, it's been a perfect event.
I think there's a whole host of excuses, isn't there? There's just go on, right?
No, I actually think that was just the first day. that wasn't even the second day, because we actually lost the clutch halfway through the first day. That's why we ended up with a gearbox problem. We lost the clutch and had to start two or three stages. I forget now on the first day with no clutch, so we're starting it on the button. And the gearbox eventually didn't like it, so we had to change the gearbox overnight. So we restarted the second day with one engine mounting missing because they didn't have time to put it back on. Gwyndaf also changed the box as well. And then Mark got the puncture that put us all about level with about three stages. Oh, Mark and I were pretty much level, I think, with about three stages left. We even made a 10-second gap to him. And then we lost the sump guard. We went through a big compression, heard a bit of a clattering, and lost the sump guard. So we had to do the last two stages in Kielder, battling against Mark Higgins with no sump guard, and just managed to scrape a win.
And there you go. And that's the story of Jack's any other business. There you go. I feel like I was there. I was there for a moment. I was there for a moment. But there you
well,
go.
You know what? There were some very good drivers there. Gwyndaf, Martin David Higgins. There's Johnny Milner. There's Alistair McRae. And our very own Ryan Champion came out on top, so I thought you deserved a bit of a description of what happened on the event and what you went through to get there. So well done, mate.
Tony,
you can do one.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Cheers, mate.
It was some battle, and I'll tweet you the front cover, Jack, of MN, because I have a copy in my office here.
Oh, maggot.
Because it was billed as the rally of the champions, because there were seven former British champions were doing it, and that was the big story before.
That's right,
that.
Yeah.
And it made the front cover. And
you know what, Ryan? I put so much effort into any other business that I even went back and read the copy. I read the report.
Well, there we are. Yeah, good on you. A lot of research. Well done.
Are you done?
There we go.
Are you done?
Yeah, I'm finished.
Yeah, all right.
I'm finished.
There's a bit of a loving there. Bit of a loving. Right.
Well, when you win the Premier League, you can have your any other business as well. I'll do my any other business on you.
I think it's far more likely that Beelzebub will ice skate to work. I think that's probably going to happen before that happens. But anyway, there you go. Ryan Champion, would you like to do your end of the business?
Well, Jack went back 10 years, which I can barely remember. I'm actually going to go back 30 years. So
excellent.
We still talk about Group B as being maybe the greatest days in rallying. I mean, we've talked about it on this show, how Group A was fantastic as well. But Group B certainly provided the spectacle. It provided the incredible cars that we still talk about now, and we're comparing 2017 cars to the look of the Group B cars. Incredibly exciting cars. Certainly the technology and the power that they had compared to road cars at the time was just immense. We only saw Group B for a very short time, and that's really because of the accidents the cars were really responsible for. And obviously, in 1986, we lost the fantastic talent of Henry Toivonen. So he was really the star man at the time. He hadn't yet won the world championship, but he'd won the RAC rally in a Sunbeam, and then he went on to win the RAC rally in 85, Monte Carlo rally in 86. Probably would have been world champion in 86, but he was sadly taken from us in that accident in Corsica, which partly brought about the demise of Group B. And I actually just wanted to go back 1 year further than that to 1985, because Toivonen was obviously an incredible hero to a lot of people, but in 85 we actually lost to Tilo Bettiger on the same rally, on the 85 Corsica, also driving for Lancia. So it was a really tough time for Lancia, and like I said, Bettiger was a very, very capable driver at the time. A lot of top fives in WRC. He finished second in San Remo, even third in places like Portugal. So he was a good all-round driver. And unfortunately, he lost his life in 85 in Corsica. But just to go forward, to bring events full circle, his son, Alessandro Bettiger, still rallying now in Italy. But Alessandro did quite a lot of world championship rallying towards the end of the 2000s, and he actually did Corsica in a world rally car in 2007 in one of the M Sport Stobart focuses. So it was a lovely story to see him, come back in a WRC car on the event where unfortunately his father had lost his life. But a nice story to sort of put that to rest, if you like. And Alessandro still competing in the Italian championship.
Yeah. I think I was there. I think I was actually there on Corsica that year as well. So, yeah, it all comes around like that quite nicely, as they say. Now, my any other business is kind of, it's still newsy stuff, because I feel like I've kind of done my own any other business in a strange way. But we did a bit of coverage of the Asia Pacific series last week. Sam Tickle came on, great Sam Tickle, who very kindly sent us some information with regards to what happened on the International Rally. And now apparently the pronunciation was wrong. There's a surprise. The International Rally Funga Rally. There you go. I pronounced it as Wulhari, but apparently you pronounce it Fun, F-U-N, new word G-E-R, new word R-E-Y. So there you go. So anyway, it was 240 competitive kilometres, and as ever, the MRF Skoda tyres, Skoda Fabia R5 with Garvu Gill and Glenn McNeil, seemed to have pretty much all their own ways, as ever it seems to happen now in the Asia Pacific series since the demise of Proton competing over there. I think they pretty much normally have it all their own way, and it's normally one of the MRF tyres, Skodas, that seem to win over there. But it was, as I say, very, very, very typical Asia-Pacific round. Started off on the Saturday and the Friday, very, very dry and everything else. And then Sunday, apparently, absolutely sodden the stages were over there. And But Garvu Gill and this Fabian Kramer, who is the new number two Skoda R5 driver over there, came in second place with Mike Young, who seems to be around forever doing the Asia-Pacific series and New Zealand Rally Championship, coming in third place. On another note, we had Hayden Paddenhout also entered in the New Zealand Rally Championship section in the AP4 class in this new Hyundai i20. And I did reach out to Hayden, by the way, but he's over in New Zealand. Obviously, he was doing this rally, and I did try and get him on for this week. But apparently, they're still dialing out some issues on that particular car. And he ended up having to retire on one day, and he came back pretty much on the Sunday only and won every stage. that's what you do when you've just won around the World Rally Championship, I guess. But one last thing before I go. It ties in quite nicely. It's the Manx National coming up this weekend, folks. And again, I always try to introduce people perhaps from overseas. Obviously, we're going to have the Manx International Rally towards the end of the year, which is the final round of the British Rally Championship. But there's also the Manx National Rally, which again, just have a bit of a Google search. Go on YouTube and stuff like that. Just look at some of the footage from the Manx. It's such a special, special place. And I know I say that about a lot of the tarmac rallies, but there is something very, very special about the Isle of Man. Which brings me down to another story, Jack, which you guys have covered. Now, I've seen this car, Mark Higgins, who, of course, we've just been talking about that Titanic battle, which, of course, Ryan Champion came out on top of in 2006 in the British Rally Championship. Mark Higgins, who's now more famed, I suppose, for being James Bond's stunt double, certainly on the driving side of things anyway. Mark is attempting this TT record again, which he broke it a few years ago now, I think, in the Subaru USA car, which he had that massive moment in, which again, if you've not seen that, please seek that out as well. Mark Higgins' massive moment on the TT lap. But this car that's now built by ProDrive, again, I was down at ProDrive probably 6 or 7 weeks ago, and I was fortunate enough to have a look at this car, and it's got a bit of purpose about it, hasn't it, Jack? You can see it in that photograph.
Stunning, isn't it? It's a really good-looking car. Mark's been out testing it. Like you say, we've run that this week. They had a lot of rain, so it was a bit pointless doing any sort of testing, any sort of serious testing anyway, as they won't be running the actual record in the works for obvious reasons. So, yeah, the testing's curtailed a little bit, but they've still got some good data on the car, and they're going to do one more installation run on it, I think on an airfield or something, before they head over to actually have a go at the record. So it should be interesting to see whether we can do it. But, yeah, Manx National next weekend, it'd be a good one if you can get over there. Definitely go and watch it. I definitely recommend watching rallying on the Manx, and there's some good drivers out there. Jason Pritchard looking to make it 3 in a row. No one's ever done that before, I don't think, and he'll have a good challenge off some really good partner there, so it should be good.
Absolutely. Right. I don't know whether you've seen the images of this ProDrive built Subaru, but it kind of, I think we've all, and I'm not just saying this again, it sounds like a Ryan Champion loving this episode. It's going to grate on me so much. But I suppose we always think of the classic Subaru as like the one that you own. And I think as time's gone by, we've had some really, really nice ones, but certainly over probably from the S14 onwards, there was a bit of an ugly duckling as far as I was concerned. But this one really does hark back to the days of a proper tarmac kind of Subaru beast of yesteryear.
Yeah, well, I think we've all lived through Subaru domination of rallying, haven't we? Not just domination of rallying, but also all the road cars around the rallies, spectator cars. You know, we sort of lived through so many Subarus, and it was such a sad day to see Subaru pull out of WRC, and I guess we all wish they were still involved. And this, yeah, gives a bit of a flavour of what a modern-day Subaru WRC car might be like. So great to see the project. You know, Subaru America really putting full backing behind it to give a good budget to ProDrive to build this car, and I think you know, it'll be quite spectacular to see on the TT course. The cars that Mark's used in the past really have been glorified road cars. They've been not really even Group N cars, so to see him in this car will be quite something.
Absolutely. I don't suppose that journalist is going to put his hand up to co-drive again for him, is he? I don't see that happening somehow.
I've watched that video of him going over Bray Hill, and I tell you, I won't be sat next to him anytime soon. No. Jesus, what a run that is. Definitely go and watch that.
I know. Well, to be fair, I'm over on the TT this year as well. I'm going over to spectate, and I go over every year or two. My other half loves it, and we go over and we get a motor home and kind of go around the island, and we've been on Braille quite a few times, and it is just phenomenal the speed the bikes go. But even when you've seen that moment with Mark, it was gee whiz. I think he described it the biggest moment of his career when he was on the program, when I think we had him on our Christmas special, didn't we? I think he called it the biggest moment of his career, I think, didn't he? Right, it was something along those lines, wasn't it? Anyway, listen, gents, that's the end of another podcast. I've got no idea where we're up to time wise. I've got a funny feeling we kind of got it back to normal. We got it back to an hour and 10 minutes, say. I've got a funny feeling we'll probably trip over on this one. So if we're robbing you of 20 minutes elsewhere of your life, we apologise, but it's all relevant and it's all about rally, and that's why you download it. with. So you know where we live. It's Absolute _ Rally on Twitter. Of course it is facebook.com/Absolute Rally. Please get in contact there. Our winners have received their PS4 games courtesy of the people of Codemasters and Dirt. Thank you so much for that. And again, thanks all for getting involved in our competition. Really, really do appreciate it. Ryan and I haven't quite got up to speed yet on Dirt. I may have a little session later on it. Unfortunately, I haven't got my play seat and all the other fancy bits to go with it, and the only way I can play it is to put my steering wheel clamped to the ironing board, which doesn't look very good, doesn't look very slick in any way, shape or form. So that might happen later on, but yeah, we need to sort something out with the Codemasters guys, and maybe even get the fresh faced Jack Benyon with us as well. Maybe he could be our wild card. Maybe he could be our wild card entry into that competition. What do you reckon, Ryan?
Sounds good to me.
Do you reckon we get Benyon on?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Let's get him in as well.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure he can crash just as well as we can.
And on that note, thank you all for downloading the podcast. Guys, same time, same place next week.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Look forward to it. Thanks again, folks. We hope you enjoyed the podcast.